What's good, wagering world? It's your boy Five Star in Vegas, and I'm broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World. I'm in here with my co-host, man, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. Glad to have you back in the spread. What's good?
Man, I'm excited. We got plenty going on in the sports world today. So you only got a half hour with me, so let's just dive right in.
Yeah, I already know, man. We'll get to your picks quick. I just want to talk a little bit with you first because you've been rocking with me since day one. As we all know, everybody hit that like button if you're rocking with the Wagering World. I had to speak briefly on this situation with Shedeur Sanders. I've never seen anything like this. It's like almost a social experiment right now, right? Like it's some things that we're seeing that I've never seen before. You got one group that they're going to hate all things Shedeur just because those are ones they claim he's an entitled, you know, piece of shit. You know, their minds already made up. They didn't like him from the jump, right? Then you got another group that hate him all because how dare anyone say that the NFL is racist or that they screwed him and they feel like, of course, if he was good enough, he would have got, you know, drafted. What are you talking about? And then you got another group that loves all things Shedeur because they're black. And, you know, some of them have dealt with the American system and injustice, got skipped for a job promotion or got a bad estimate on their house. And they feel like that their white counterpart got a better estimate on their house and were able to sell for more or dealt with stuff with the judicial system. And they feel like, man, the NFL is racist, it's elitist. They're hating on Shedeur. I'm none of those things. With me, everything that I'm dealing with this, it makes me so frustrated because as with us being better spread, we have to be rational. We deal with data. We watch film. We take the data and we use the data. And with the data, we forecast. That's all we're doing in this situation. But it seems like people aren't approaching it that way. You're seeing all of these guys with these gotcha moments, even some guys like this one dude, Brent Fasano. He's a straight asshole. He's on here just doing a parade and dancing around because he felt like Shedeur failed. And I'm like, dude, are you guys taking in this whole situation? First of all, it was an impromptu start because he had no idea he was touching the field this week. So he's getting no practice reps, wasn't a part of the game plan install at all. In fact, I think he had zero snaps. That's what Stefanski said about he never got any snaps during the whole time since he's been drafted there with the first team, right? So you're dealing with that. He's not even knowing he's going in the game. Even with that, even though he goes 4-16, throws an interception, I saw plenty of things that were really encouraging, including the 25-yard pass that we've never seen Dylan Gabriel make once in his life on the NFL field to Harold Fannin when he throws it with perfect touch over the linebackers in between the safeties. And also, things might have been a little bit different if we get a catch by the young kid that he threw the fade route to, Gage LeVar Dane. He drops the pass, but it's right on target, 25-yard game tying touchdown pass. With all that said, I say just give him some time. Like, we have to allow this kid to at least get a week of preparation, a week of game plan install. People who don't watch football or know much about football, who haven't played, don't understand. Every week there's a game plan install where the coach sits down with the starting quarterback and talks to him about what does he like, what does he feel good about running, and they put together a game plan. He hasn't had anything like that. He's basically like a guy off the streets being thrown in there. He's run some scout team stuff, been on a whole different field working because Stefanski makes sure to alienate him because he wants to lift up Dylan Gabriel. He wants Dylan Gabriel to not feel questioned about his job. He feels like he's the guy, so he puts all of his development and everything into him. Now, has life, how life would have it, he's forced now to develop him. We're going to see if they somehow make a miracle and rush back Dylan Gabriel this week from concussion protocol, which is dangerous and they shouldn't. I haven't seen any quarterbacks come back the next week after concussion protocol. But if they do, then we'll never find out. But if they go by the protocol and Dylan Gabriel is out this week and Shedeur gets a chance to run first team reps with the first team offense, if he gets an opportunity to be a part of the game plan installation, if he also gets a chance to know that he's going to be the starter, have the confidence of knowing that, yeah, I'm about to go out here and play with these guys. Let me get, you know, used to running with the first team. I think we're going to see a completely different, you know, performance. And I also believe that's when we start judging him. I don't think you can judge him as a first-time starter being thrown in against a very complex Ravens defense with all their guys back who are playing for their playoff lives and just throwing them out there because of a, you know, something that happened to Dillon Gabriel, man. We can go back to the numbers. These are some of the all-time greats, and I have plenty that I could give out, but I'm going to just give these four. This was after a week of preparation for all four of these guys where they knew they were going to be the starters, where they knew that they were going to be starting that week. They were part of the game plan installation with the head coach. Josh Allen's first start, 6 of 15 for 75 yards. Peyton Manning's first start, 3 interceptions. That year he set the record for the most interceptions by a rookie quarterback in a season. Eli Manning, 17 of 37, 162 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. Brett Favre, 7 of 14, 2 interceptions, no touchdown passes. So let's just kind of calm down. And it just gets me frustrated because I'm always arguing with these guys who are thinking because I'm black that I just want Shador to do good because he's a brother. It has nothing to do with that, man. I'm a successful sports bettor because we don't deal with emotions. If he sucked, I'd say, nah, this kid can't play. But I saw plenty enough tape at Colorado to know that his game will translate to the NFL if properly developed, if properly given the right reps, if he's set up for, you know, to go into the week with an actual game plan that's installed for him. What are your thoughts, Brett?
And we're going to keep this quick because I agree with you on most of the stuff, and I got stuff that I want to debate with you here a little on. The final thing I want to say about Shador Sanders is it's still a poor opportunity. And my point would be, look at Joe Flacco over in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah.
He's the same player. Not like he got better. Numbers look a lot better in Cincinnati. So I think it's really going to be tough for us to have a referendum on this kid. I was excited for him to get a start, and I hope he plays again next week because I think the NFL is more interesting with him in there. I think everybody that watches football knows that Dillon Gabriel is going to be a backup at best in this league, and it was kind of shocking they weren't seeing what they had in Sanders after spending the draft capital on him. But let's go straight into the past here because, like I said, I agree with everything else you said. Let's talk about Philadelphia and Detroit. I mean, that was the superstar subtraction there, right? They announced Cade being out. I told you I was on Detroit. They announced Cade is out. I go, oh, no, and you joked around on the show. Great show on Friday, by the way. And you guys joked around. You said, well, now you're going to win, right, because that's just how the NBA works. That's what happened there. I had the game on, but honestly, I don't have much to take away except for the fact that Detroit's playing really good defense. And one of the reasons the NFL is better than the NBA is at this point, Embiid is going to hamper the development of those young kids with Edgecombe, Maxey, and then who's the other kid that was playing the rookie last year? I think it's Jared McCain. I want to see them play an up-tempo style of basketball. I don't think Embiid fits in there. It's too bad they can't just waive him. But with that contract, he's almost untradeable. But Detroit playing excellent defense, I think that's the key to their early season success. But I want to hear what you think about Portland at Houston. You won the first half there. It's a fun game, and I thought you guys had a real good conversation about what's going on with the Rockets this year. And, of course, they're an exciting story in the NBA.
Yes, real briefly about the Pistons. Hakeem Prophet had tweeted, are the Pistons the new OKC because how deep they are? They're a really talented roster. And I'm really glad that Danish Jenkins got some run and people are able to see what kind of contributor he could be in the NBA. I've been following him since Iona. He ended up going to St. John's with Rick Pitino and kind of, you know, helping him rebirth that, you know, university and its basketball-rich tradition. So Danis is a really good player, man. Watch for Danis Jenkins. He's one of those guys, if he ever gets an opportunity to be the guy, I think that he'll be a really good player in the NBA. Great cash by you on that one. We had the Rockets first quarter, first half. First quarter Rockets has been an automatic bet for me most of the season. It's only been a few games that I didn't play them. Actually, last night I didn't play them because I just felt coming off the weekend on a Saturday that they were going to be a little bit slow starting out, but they ended up getting it done at the end for me as I got them live at the end of the game at plus 180. But I'm just really, really psyched that I was wrong about this, and that's what makes me happy. I deal with information where as information comes, I take the good information, and with it, I use it, and I pivot, man. So it was really – we appreciate you being in here, Lisa. Thanks. We're always looking for young ladies who are in the sports business to join the community. Welcome. We're glad to have you here. So with the Rockets, I only wanted Jalen Green to remain a Rocket because of his youth and his durability. For two straight seasons, he had missed a game, and how life would have it, he ends up pulling his hamstring, and now he hasn't played, but I think one or two games for Phoenix, and KD has been there every game, and he's looking reinvigorated, just an absolutely critical piece to opening up everything that we're seeing with Sagoon. I have a ticket on Sagoon at I can't believe I got it at plus 5,000, and then after it dropped again, and I ended up grabbing it again at plus 2,000 to win the MVP. In my opinion, it's going to be a time sooner than later that Sagoon is going to be considered one of the top five players in this whole NBA. You own him early. You told me about him when we were getting ready to draft him. I didn't know much about him because he played in a league that I don't watch, EuroLeague. I watch more of the higher level EuroLeague, and he played in the Turkish League, which is in the country that he's from. So I hadn't seen a lot of film on him. But kudos to you, and kudos to the guys in the Rockets community on X who kind of already saw where his game could go. I didn't see him being anything but a guy that was a back to the basket guy, and he had problems finishing around the rim because he struggled with athleticism around the rim. But extremely nifty, man. When they called him a baby joker, that is true, man. He's the next Jokic, man, and I'm just so happy that he's a part of our Rockets team. And shout out to KD, man, because KD has really helped those kids a lot, brought that veteran experience. He's like a coach on the floor, and he gets everyone in the right position. He was extremely a big point of us coming back last night. He would not let the Rockets lose him or Sagoon. So shout out to them on a night that our men had an off night. But the Rockets are a really good roster, and I couldn't be happier to be a fan.
All right, let's talk about college football. Clemson took on Louisville. I checked out the show with you. You were on Clemson. Good pick there. We got the cash. What did you see in that game? Because I actually missed it.
Man, Clemson defense, they stepped up, they played well. Dabo stayed patient, man. He made a mistake that we see often. We've seen now that Mike Norvell has lost his job at Florida State, all because after a great beginning to his career, he picked DJ Uiagalelei. And I warned people before the season about that a couple seasons ago that, man, why did he go get Uiagalelei? He's not going to do well. He's going to make them fall off, and they have never recovered at that program. Now, you look at the same situations going on with Clemson, one of the worst years that Dabo Sweeney has had as a head coach, and it's all tied to his quarterback, Cade Klubnik, man. Cade Klubnik was overrated coming into this season. All of that first-round talk, we laughed about it on this show because we knew that he's just not a good player, and he turns the ball over too much, man. He's just a decent quarterback, and he isn't even decent now because he's lost all of his confidence and is showing on the field. They have some great weapons over there at the wide receiver position, at the running back position, and I think that Dabo, it might be time for him to go somewhere else and get a fresh start. If not, then he needs to get the right quarterback. I know Kay won't be the quarterback next year because I believe he's a senior, but I think that if he stays at Clemson, we'll see the old Clemson. Louisville, I told you guys, they were dealing with a lot. I believe that Clemson was a better defense. That was the best unit out of all four units on the field. Louisville has a hell of a running back, hell of a coach in Jeff Braun, but I'm not a Miller Mouse guy. And Miller Mouse ended up not being able to complete enough balls for Louisville to win that game. Also, remember I told you guys that Louisville was dealing with the fact that last week a guy made some terroristic threats against Miller Mouse and Jeff Braun. So it's just a lot that was going on in that locker room after that California loss. Clemson needed that game because they want to be in the playoffs. They come through for us for the first half and for the game.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to Notre Dame. And one of America's most popular team gets the cover against Pitt. We had under 54. What was your analysis on that, right? We're not only scouting these teams, we're scouting our own handicapping. Bad break. Or is it bad beat? What happened there on the Notre Dame?
And I apologize. I put that on there. I took the over 54. I'm sorry about this. Okay. That's on me. Yeah, that's on me, guys. I sent over to spread about what we're going to talk about. I put it wrong. I lost that bet. Me and the group lost it because I had over 54 Notre Dame has went over most of their games this season, and they should have went over this game. Pitt screwed off the ball so many times within the 10, and then the last drive was the weirdest drive I've ever seen because the Pitt head coach, instead of them being aggressive, even though they're down, like, your thing on offense is to always try to score. It doesn't matter what the score of the game is. You want your team to have confidence on offense and attempt to put the ball in the box every time that they touch it, no matter what the score is on the scoreboard. You're playing against yourself if you're a good team and a good coach. You're not playing against the score. So they get the ball. They kind of run and, you know, lollygag on the last drive. And suddenly they start pushing the ball when it gets to like 20 seconds left in the game, which is so weird because they had it with like maybe a minute and 30 seconds left. They end up scoring. He calls a timeout, even though they're down 30 with 7 seconds left, and they score a touchdown. So I'm all happy, like, okay, now they're going to go for two, and we're going to get the push on the total. The refs made their own rules because they got a call. I'm actually going to go talk to the gaming commission about that and try to get refunded that ticket because by the rules of the NCAA, you have to kick the extra point or try an extra point after a score unless it's overtime. So the refs just left the field after the touchdown and didn't allow them to proceed with the extra point conversion, and it ended up costing us that ticket. So I will be challenging that this week, but that's a bad beat and a bad break. The bad beat comes with the fact that they score but aren't allowed to get the two-point conversion. That's the bad break.
A couple college games I checked out. I want to add to the script real quick. Georgia and Texas, of course, the biggest game of the year and or of the weekend. Georgia got the dominating victory. Kirby Smart kind of having some fun in the post game, just talking about how physical his team was, and it shows on the field. But kind of relating back to what we talked about with Sanders, our society is so impatient. I'm seeing good things from Arch Manning, and I know that, you know, he's supposed to be the greatest prospect, and Trevor Lawrence and Andrew Luck and John Elway, right, and what he was compared to. But I think he's continuing to get better, and I saw a lot of positive things there from Arch. I still think he needs another year in school. I wouldn't come out this year if I was, but I thought that he was continuing to improve. Felt like his teammates actually let him down this week, where it felt in the beginning of the season he was letting his teammates down. What did you see in that game?
He doesn't have a strong receiving core this year. His best receiver has hands of bricks. He's dropped so many passes this year. Wingo, it's ridiculous. Yeah. The problem with Arch is just Arch had to stop being a good time having little fella. He's a guy who you could tell likes to have a good time and cut up. He's going to have to be more disciplined moving forward, further. He's going to have to spend more time on the practice field and less time in the bars in Austin. That's his problem, man. And when he does, we're going to see him become the guy that we think that he could be. We said before the season started, as he was one of the quarterbacks, I said we would be fading. He just hasn't developed his mechanics enough, and that's really strange with two uncles who are pro quarterbacks. But as
honestly, he doesn't listen to him.
As I was about to say, they both mentioned that he doesn't even talk to him. Like Peyton says, it's hell to get him on the phone. You know, so that's on him. You have all these guys around you who are trying to help you, guys who've done it at the highest level, two Super Bowl winning uncles, and you don't want to take the time to just, you know, humble yourself and listen to some of their perspectives. That's the problem with Arch. Arch thought that he could just get out there and be a little hot ass and do it himself, and you can't. No one can do it alone, man. None of us can do anything alone. We all need help, man, and he needs to practice more. If he practices and he has the tools, he's born with outstanding athleticism that was passed down to him from his grandfather because he runs and plays like Archie Manning. He just has to work on his passing game, man. And the reason why his passing sucks is because he has poor mechanics. His feet are never set. He's always throwing sidearms, and he misses a lot of guys in the intermediate game. His best balls that he throws right now are deep balls, but that's always the easiest pass for young quarterbacks. We saw with Shador, his best two passes of the game were down the field. You know, it's working the intermediate, the short stuff where it gets jumbled and it gets a lot of people in the passing lanes where young quarterbacks struggle. I have no doubt that Arch is coming back next year. He's going to come back.
I hope he does, and I hope this situation humbles him because I think he's got a lot of potential, and maybe he actually starts answering the call from Peyton. He can learn a lot, and he can end up being a great player, and, you know, this might be the exact situation he needed. Maybe it's good he's struggling a little bit because if he went in the NFL with this attitude, he might end up with some Will Levis. type of outcomes. Let's move over to the NFL. I got lucky on, well, definitely the first game. And the two games you put on there, I actually got them both right. Seattle, I took the +3. That's kind of an old man deal in me. Take the points in those is close division games. And then as we saw in the end, right, you know, it felt like the Rams comfortably won the game. But Seattle crawls back. They cut it to 2. And then, of course, the Rams aren't going to try and score again, which is why the points are more valuable in the NFL than, say, they are in basketball, where teams are going to keep trying to score until the final 30 seconds. And, of course, the big headline is going to be Darnold having another tough game there. And, of course, as someone who's really been rooting for Darnold, that was tough for me to watch. But that Seattle defense is still so good. I'm not going to count this team out. And hopefully Darnold can bounce back. Stafford moves in to the MVP conversation. Of course, he's now first in the league in passing touchdowns. And two great teams, a great football game, and these teams could perhaps meet again in the playoffs. What did you see in that one?
Just a really solid effort from the Rams defense. When last show, if you remember when Raheem Palmer was on here with me, we were talking about the Rams secondary, and they showed up, man, and I was telling them how Jerry Verse is such a good player. He lifts that defense up to play even better than, you know, what it is on paper. I've also talked how many times before over and over this season and in the past that Sam Darnold, when it really counts, is going to turn to who he is. He's a guy that turns the ball over extremely, you know, he turns the ball over way too much. And when pressure gets on him and it's pressure moments in the game, he just loses it. It's all good when he's in front. You know, that's why I think that it was really smart. Mike McDonald tries to get the Seahawks up early on every team. This is the first game I think that they've been losing during the last little win streak that they had. They've always got ahead of teams, and that allows Sam Darnold to be comfortable because it's a lot easier playing in front. He's not a guy that can deal with those type of moments well, and McDonald's going to have to go get a quarterback. I don't know if he's, you know, still developing the kid out of Houston that went to Alabama, because he's going to bring a run element. And I'm talking about Jalen Milroe. He's going to bring a run element that Sam Darnold doesn't possess. I feel like Darnold has hit his ceiling. I think that we've seen what Sam Darnold's going to be in the NFL. And I don't think his ceiling isn't good enough to win playoff games consistently.
Let me jump in there real quick. I got a question for you, and we can be quick on this.
Okay.
As a Raiders fan, and everyone wants us to draft a quarterback, I don't think this is the year. Other than Mendoza and maybe Dante Moore, I don't see it. And it's funny because I'm trying to work on my scouting, so I'm watching that Alabama game, and I'm thinking in my head, and I felt good because I watched, and I go, you know, this guy doesn't look like anything more than maybe an NFL-level backup.
Yeah,
and then 5 minutes later, I saw you tweet the same thing, right? Yeah. A little better than Dylan Gabriel, but yeah. I still don't see it there. I think that Mendoza, I would definitely want. Maybe Dante Moore, I got to watch some more, but this doesn't seem like a good year for quarterbacks in the NFL. I would rather try and develop Milroe one more year and keep it going with Sam. At least you can keep a winning culture going while you develop a new guy. What do you think there? Am I missing someone besides Mendoza and Moore that could potentially be a top 15 quarterback in the NFL?
Some of the guys who are the better quarterbacks that are coming out are guys who need developing a little more. Like Lenore Sellers has all of the tools, but I always comp him to Steve McNair, but Steve McNair was a much better passer. I kind of comp him to Dak Prescott as well. Dak could throw, but we didn't see it at Ole Miss. But after they developed him and he with the right coaching, and I think that's kind of with Lenore Sellers, with his strength and his speed and his, you know, gamemanship. He's one of those guys who he wants to win. He plays hard when the game is on the line. He may can develop into someone that you could trust. Dante Moore is the number one guy to me if he lands in the right situation, and that's the problem with these teams. Like, if you're not in the right situation, you're just not going to be good. As we saw Sam Darnold struggle, we saw Baker Mayfield struggle in Carolina, and both of those guys can play. They're good enough to be starters in the NFL. Baker is a higher-level, top-tier starter. Even though he was a number one pick, it was by Cleveland, because Cleveland does stuff like that, like them taking him number one, them spending money on Deshaun Watson when nobody wanted him, them grabbing Shador when it was already passed around for no one to draft him, that he had been blackballed. So Cleveland took them, but they didn't even develop, and they gave up on them so quick. So yeah, if I'm the Raiders, if I can get to Dante Moore, who I think that they're trying to get to, then they'll be okay. I don't know about Mendoza. I just don't know. He can play, but I don't know if he's going to ever be better than a high end backup. You know, like I think he can make it.
I like Mendoza a lot. Let's see where he ends up. If he gets drafted by New York, though, like you said, he's screwed. What'd you see in Philadelphia last night? My main takeaway, because I was watching the game and scrolling Twitter, is that most of these football fans, and this is where we can find an edge, they're so fantasy football and player prop oriented, they just don't understand good defenses. I'm watching these fantasy guys just be shocked that Amon-Ra St. Brown and Saquon Barkley, these guys aren't going up. I'm going, guys, these are two of the best defenses in the NFL. These are two of the best defensive lines in the NFL. Like, what do you guys expect? Like, of course you're going to be able to put up big points against Cincinnati and Dallas, but defense still rules the league, you know, except in the very most elite situations. It's funny to me that I'm sitting there, and as smart as we've gotten football, it's like we still have this edge where I swear these people only look at quarterback, wide receiver, and running back, and we're not judging how good these defenses were. It was just so funny to me that people were in shock that two of the best defenses in the league put up a defensive masterpiece, man. Philadelphia continues to be underrated because we hold them to the standard of a Super Bowl winner, where teams like Detroit and Green Bay, we kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. I think almost Philadelphia is getting underrated by the market, as I wouldn't have been surprised if they made that cover even easier. What did you see in that game last night?
I was on the under. You guys know, if you follow me enough, I rarely play unders. I'm an over bettor if I'm going to bet totals. Really, I'm a side bet. I rarely bet totals at all, but if I do, I usually bet overs. I look for overs in college football. Those are one of my favorite, and college basketball. But this was a clear under game with the weather, with the ineptness of the Eagles' offense. The Eagles aren't going to get back to the Super Bowl. I don't know who's going to beat them or how they're going to beat them in the playoffs in NFC. Maybe it's the Rams to get it done.
I like the way they match up.
I picked the Rams to go to the Super Bowl this year. I picked the Rams versus Kansas City. Kansas City doesn't look like if they're going to even – like they might not even get into the – to the playoffs. If they can get in the playoffs, they'll be okay, because the Broncos are going to be one of those number one seeds with home field advantage. They're losing the division round. But I don't think the Eagles offense looks good this year, man. It just, everything seems like a real struggle. You can see on the field that AJ Brown is not happy, even though he caught a little bit more passes this week. It's clear that Smitty is the number one option for Jalen Hurts, and he likes to work with him more. So I see that A.J. Brown would definitely probably be gone in the offseason, you know. So that's one thing. But that defense is outstanding. You know, they've built a beast on defense with a lot of Georgia players over there, and they look really good in it. You know, that's going to be the thing. You're going to have the type of offense that can put points up on them. And we saw the Rams go to Philadelphia and put up points early, but Jalen Hurts answered the bell that game. We'll see if he'll be able to do it in the playoffs. Detroit is the same thing. Jared Goff just is a horrible outdoors quarterback. You know, his hands are small, and he continues to have a lot of turnover problems outside of domes. Anytime he's dealing with elements like, you know, rain or wind, the way that defensive line were able to stuff the running game of the Lions was very impressive, because I expect the Lions to get in there and run the ball on them, because we knew with the conditions that they weren't going to be able to throw a lot. Just a great job by the Eagles. Vic Fangio continues to show that he's a Hall of Fame coordinator, man. He's taken that defense and made it the strongest part of that Eagles team.
All right, I got time for a quick breakdown here, and then I'm going to give you a pick and get out of here and let you finish off the show. Solo, but talk to me about you can do the NBA after I leave. I lean towards the Bucks in that game that you put on there. Not enough to make it a play, though. man, Milwaukee's a tough team to handicap. But I want to hear your breakdown on my favorite team tonight, the Las Vegas Raiders. They're hosting the Dallas Cowboys. My original lean is towards the Raiders, but it feels like they're a public dog, 5-star. I just watched this line keeping going down and down. How are you approaching this game I was joking around with a Cowboys fan this morning. I said, boy, this is the first time as a Raiders fan I get to go into a game and have the better defense. What do you think's going on here tonight when the Raiders host the Cowboys?
I'll be at this game. I'm actually going to that game. I'll be playing the Cowboys first half minus 2.5 on this one. I just think that their offense, and also indoors with the type of kicker that they have, they'll be able to be up 3 points. Raiders are struggling on offense. This might be a situation now where the Cowboys can get a little bit of momentum going on defense, at least early. I haven't seen enough from Geno to trust him to be able to go, you know, dart for dart with the Cowboys early. The Cowboys do tend to start fast. Now, for the full game, second half adjustments, Pete Carroll maybe is able to do some things to get them back in the game. But if you're Tucker's the Raiders' number one option at receiver, man, they need a lot of help on offense, man. You know, they have the kid that's a rookie, is running back, who's still developing. It's just I don't think that they have enough power, enough potency on offense to keep up with Dallas early. So I'll be on the Cowboys first half on this one.
All right, there we go. One thing I wanted to point out too, another thing that kept me off the Raiders, three, you know, the Cowboys defenses look bad, but three big pickups there. Well, I guess Ryan Clark, but I think that having Quinn and Williams next to him is going to make Clark look a lot better. You know, kind of an unsung, quote unquote, throw-in, really solid D tackle to be a throw-in there in the Michael Parsons trade. Of course, they added that linebacker from Cincinnati, who I think being in a better environment is going to help him a lot. And then I can't remember the guy's name. It's Deshaun, starts with an O. Anyways. Above average player also coming back to that Cowboys defense tonight. So it might be a little better than maybe what we've seen the past couple weeks. Another reason to stay off the Raiders. So five-star, I'm going to go ahead and give you my pick, but I'm going to continue to listen. And hey, if you got time, we got some good college basketball games coming up this week. So sucks that Kansas Duke looks like Peterson's going to be out. I really want to see him play.
Is that tomorrow night?
That's tomorrow night. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'll be on the show on Wednesday, but I really would love to hear your breakdown of UConn, Arizona, because I think that's going to be a fun game.
Let's jump on tomorrow in the morning before you go out, before you leave. And see.
I might be able to. I'll have to let you know. I'm not sure. I'll call you later. Actually, I'll call you tomorrow morning around the same time.
Yeah, that way we'll see about talking some college basketball.
Yeah, because there's another good one for tomorrow night as well. Also, I think Auburn's taking on Illinois on Wednesday night. But I'm really like kind of transferring to college basketball over NBA just with the idea that, you know, if you don't care, why should I care? And that's kind of how I feel about these NBA players. They don't care about the game, so why should I care? And you watch these games and the stakes and just the feeling and the atmosphere. It's a lot of fun. So I've been diving into college basketball. Not really an informed breakdown. I'm just kind of playing around with the numbers right now, but I'm taking under tonight in K-State and Tulsa. I think both those teams are going to slow the pace a little lower than usual. And one thing that I've noticed so far is that, you know, with like a team like K-State, well, they play a really weak team so far. It's going to up their shooting percentage. It's going to up their points per game. But, you know, you play against a little better competition. And I know it's still a fairly big spread tonight, but it's not going to be a complete, you know, varsity versus JV type of deal. I think K-State's offensive efficiency is going to drop, which is going to lead this game to go under. Another one that I'm on for tonight, I did lay it with UCF tonight. Oakland, kind of a fun story there, five-star, and you know this more than me. Boy, talk about a tough strength to schedule. Who plays two number one teams in a week, right? Because they take on Purdue. Purdue was actually listed at number one at this point. Then Houston has a great performance. The people in the polls move Houston to number one. And then Oakland has to take on Houston. So, boy, they're four games in, and they played the number one team in the nation twice already. But I think that, you know, they were able to cover against Purdue. But I think that gauntlet catches up to them tonight, and Central Florida kind of gets a chance to make a statement. So those are the two college basketball plays I'm on tonight. I'm going to let you take it out from here.
One more time, but what's the exact plays you're playing? You're playing the under on Kansas State and Tulsa, and you're playing
– yeah.
You're laying the points with Central Florida.
Yeah, Central Florida minus Oakland. 13. Those are my two plays, and I'm going to jump out here. I'll take this one off, and you can take it over. We'll see you guys tomorrow, but hopefully I'll see you next week. Good show with you, and I'll be listening as I jump into the car.
All right, Spread. Have a good one. Be safe out there, man. All right, guys. It's just you and I. Let me wrap up this show. Let's talk a little bit about some college football, since we got some college football that's coming up on Tuesday. Now, the one game that stands out to me, guys, is going to be the Western Michigan game at Northern Illinois. I believe Western Michigan is laying 5.5 on the road in this game. You got two programs who've had their turns at being at the top of the MAC. Northern Illinois, I've always been a fan of their head coach. He always has them ready to play. They're having a down year, but they had a really tough schedule starting out the season. Western Michigan, with that big win last week at home against Ohio, took first place in the MAC. Oh, the lines went up now to 6.5. So they're laying minus 6.5 in Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois has dominated this series. And Northern Illinois is coming off its best offensive performance of the year against lowly UMass. I think at home that they'll be ready to play. So I'll be definitely playing on this one. Northern Illinois plus 6.5 at home against Western Michigan. Western Michigan struggles on offense to move the ball. If not for a bad miss by the refs when they allowed the receiver to catch the ball, run out of bounds, and break free for a 70-yard touchdown, they probably lose that one to Ohio as well. So I got to roll with Northern Illinois at home. I think the Northern Illinois actually was a live dog to win money line as well. They'll be motivated to just screw up Western Michigan's season, man. And as I said, they've had a really good time playing them. They've won the last three, and the last two they've won by an average of 23 points. So give me Northern Illinois plus 6.5 on the college football slate. Any questions from the people before I get out of here? I got a lot to do today, man. I got to get out some merchandise to some people who order some merch from www.thewageringworld.com. I appreciate everyone who rocks with me, everyone who has purchased merchandise, and everyone who just taps in on the show. I spoke about it last week while I've been away. I'm going to hope to do some more shows this week. Some things have kind of calmed down and some businesses that I had to take care of outside of the sports stuff. And man, now I might have a little bit more time to jump on here 20 or 30 minutes with you guys. Also, we were able to cash. Hopefully you guys were able to get in the tennis play that I gave. We had Alcaraz beating FAA, also him with Struff, and Struff was able to win in the finals out there in Lyon, France, indoors. So that was another cash we got. I've been really hot on these free plays. Yesterday I gave out, I'm sorry, I gave it like 10 minutes before kickoff, but I was out running around with my wife. We dropped the kids off to go play. And then after that, we went to the Wynn and we went to Westgate and watched some games and did a little betting ourselves. And during that time, man, I let time get away from me. I already had a huge bet in on Saskatchewan Rough Riders for the first half and for the game. They'd been the best team all season. So hopefully you got it. Hopefully you had a book that by the time that you got it, they went by the real kickoff time, which was 3:15 Pacific Standard Time. I gave out the play about 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If not, hopefully you had a book that allowed you to access the game live, as it ended up working out well for you. If so, because Montreal actually scored first. They scored the first touchdown and had the lead early in that game. Just a point from the CFL that I recognized was that Corey Mace, who I've been following as their coach for a while, he's a really good head coach, used to be a player up in the CFL. He made a great challenge at the goal line that changed the whole momentum of that game. Montreal was up 7-0, I believe, or 7-3. I can't remember. I think 7-0. And when they were driving in, Saskatchewan got stopped on the goal line. You know, they do three downs in college, in Canadian football. They don't do four downs. It was third down and maybe 1 yard. Usually a quarterback sneak situation in the CFL. But for some reason, Saskatchewan felt better with allowing Trevor Harris to throw the ball. They're all everything quarterback who has multiple Grey Cup championships now after the win. The pass is on target, but the receiver has a defensive back all on his back, and he, you know, makes him drop the ball. If it was the NFL, they would have got away with it. Ball would have been to Montreal. Montreal would have took complete control of the game, been up 7-0 with the ball in the championship game. Instead, Corey Mace is able to challenge the fact that the referees missed the defensive pass interference. With him being able to challenge that, that allowed the refs to get the call right, put the pressure on them from the video room to make the right call. They get the ball back, get a first down. They end up scoring. When they score the touchdown, they never look back. we're able to cash that one easy. The NFL will never allow coaches to be able to challenge pass interference calls again or penalties. It's too much money involved in betting, and they won't allow themselves to keep control of that aspect. You notice the time for reviews have taken longer and longer and longer and longer over the years. They started out initially being really fast. You know, it's just obvious. Look at the video, see what happened. Maybe they're back in like 60 seconds with a decision. Now they're going through commercial breaks. They're taking like 15 minutes. And the only reason it's taking so long is because they have to get the word from the books on whether this play will affect the money count. As simple as that. Anyone who doesn't see that, I don't know what to tell you. Shout out, Courtney. I appreciate you for checking in, man. My boy, Jeff Wilson out there in Memphis as well, man. Shout out, J-Dub, my bro for life. All right, guys, I guess it's time for me to wrap up the show. Let's get to the ball and parlay. Let's see what I'll be playing today. I know you guys like a little tennis. Let me see, can I find us a tennis player? It's getting scarce on the tennis, man. All of the big dogs, they're pretty much finished until January after Christmas, man. They'll come back with Adelaide and then, you know, the Australian Open. Besides that, you got to pick your spots on tennis right now, man. A lot of the tennis that we're used to seeing up is gone right now, man. What's up? What's up, Cash? I appreciate you, bro. Salute. Shout out my homie, Just J Cash. We appreciate you for tuning in, man. Yes, sir. J-Dub. So it's limited tennis right now, guys, for us to bet on. I've been finding little spots. I just was able to hit Alva. It's these lower tier girls right now playing that usually play the 35s, the 100s. You might find a 250 right now, but some indoor tournaments, just keep your eyes out on them, you know, and if we see some, we'll definitely get them out. So I'm going to give you guys some college basketball. I've been doing really well on the college basketball of late. You heard spread give out Central Florida at minus 13. I definitely can see that one coming in pretty much pretty easily as well. He's right. They went through a gauntlet. It's going to be tough for them to continue to play with this type of competition. I'm going to play a big number. Gonzaga minus 36.5. Gonzaga's been a covering machine of late, man. I think that they can be up 30 at halftime. So they'll be playing, I believe they're playing Southern Utah. And Southern Utah can score the ball, but they're not going to be able to play enough defense to hang with the Zags. The Zags go on these crazy runs. If the Zags are locked in, I think that they can cover their minus 36.5 pretty easily. We also have a lot of NBA tonight. On the NBA side of things, as long as Giannis is playing, I do like the Bucks to cover the 7 at Cleveland. Giannis has given Cleveland fits over his career, so I will be playing the Bucks plus 7.5 on that one at Cleveland. But remember, it's based on if Giannis is playing. If Giannis isn't playing, it's a no play for me. And lastly, we're going to go with Northern Illinois for tomorrow night at plus 6.5. They'll be hosting Western Michigan. I think that Northern Illinois is a really, really solid team. And I think that they'll, even though their record is 3-7, they're a lot better than their record. They had some tough losses at the beginning of the season. Most of all, they're a really good program led by a really solid head coach. Western Michigan should be flying high coming off of beating Ohio at home and taking over first place in the MAC. But a tough road trip for them going to Illinois, man. It's just, they don't have a lot of good experiences there, man, and they don't have the offense to come in and dominate. The offense struggles to move the ball, and I think that they will continue to. I would not be surprised, as I said before, if Northern Illinois wins money line. Shout out to everyone who's rocking with Five Star in Vegas. I appreciate you guys for tuning in to the Wagering World. I'll be at the game tonight. Me and Raheem are going to catch the Raiders and the Cowboys tonight. We'll try to be back with you guys later this week. I appreciate everyone who tunes into the Wagering World. Once again, if you missed the beginning of the show, I kind of broke down about how this Shedeur Sanders situation is, man, it's kind of like a glimpse of our current society, man. You got some people who, no matter what you do, they're going to hate on you, man. They're going to want to see you down. They're not going to take in the whole picture, the whole scope. They're only concern is being able to tap dance on your grave. Don't worry about those people. Keep working hard the way that life has it. Just as I said, Now, the situation is came about where Dylan Gabriel didn't make it through the season. And I said earlier this year that Shedeur Sanders would be the starter by the winter. Now, as long as Gabriel isn't clear for concussion protocol, which he shouldn't be, we'll see how Shedeur Sanders performs in his first start as a real starter in the NFL, where he had reps the whole week with the team, where he had the game plan installed for him, and where he knew that he was going to be the starter. You know, that's a big thing. You're just getting thrown in on the spot. I'm not going to take that as a real analysis of how good of a player he's going to be, man. I was over there yesterday, Jay. Me and my wife were over there yesterday. I think I gave you guys, I know I told Ski, maybe you all were in that group, and I told him to go take Saskatchewan. He said he did. I don't know if you guys heard me or not, but I told him to tell you all. Yeah, but I'm not going to put anything into yesterday's start. And even with that, even out of those four passes he completed, two of the incompletions of the 16, one of them was really a great throw that the receiver should have held on to, and it would have tied the game up. I think that this kid has a bright future in NFL. I think he has NFL talent arm. And I think that now, if Stefanski's forced to coach him correctly, that we're going to see a much, much better performance by him. Stefanski's worst nightmare is that he had to allow Shedeur to run with the first team. But now how life has it, he may have to this week. And we'll see a real performance. Also, earlier, I gave guys and ladies in here about, you know, the stats for other quarterbacks who are now great on their first starts. And I gave four, but it's plenty other examples. You had Josh Allen only went for 6 of 15 for 74 yards his first start. Peyton Manning threw 3 interceptions his first start. Eli Manning was 17 of 37, 2 interceptions his first start. Brett Favre was 7 of 14 for 75 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions his first start. So calm down, relax, in the words of my guy Aaron Rodgers. It's still a lot to go. I'm not going to get caught up with the foolishness. And when I know people are just coming from a hater, you know, point of view, is that they're hoping everything that the kid does goes wrong. So forgive me if sometimes I answer that mess on X. I probably need to stop dealing with it. But every now and then I have to come with a voice of reason, because none of these people who are making these ignorant points on X have watched enough film to even talk about quarterback. Like, I've watched every snap Shedeur play since Jackson State, and I'd be the first one to say he sucks if he sucks. I was very hard on Shiloh as a DB because Shiloh was a good hitter, but he was horrible in coverage. I'm just going to tell what I see on the film, man, and I know that Shedeur Sanders put Travis Hunter in a situation where he won the Heisman. He didn't have to make any ridiculous catches this last when he was the receiver there last year. A lot of the balls were right there on the money, 90% of them. And he also got three other receivers into the NFL from his accuracy and his ability to hit them on the run and allow them to get yards after the catch. So a lesson for myself: don't involve yourself in the hate. Just pull back. And the way that life works, life will always show the truth in the end. Hey, guys, I appreciate you for rocking with 5-Star in Vegas. I'll try to be back this week, man. He said, what's my stance on MMA5? Brother Diaz Griff, I do not deal with any MMA fighting. I don't bet on fights. The last fights I bet on was when Floyd was still fighting. Like, I didn't even put a lot of money on Bud Crawford against Canelo, and I knew Bud was going to win. It's just the fact that anytime that the decision is in the hands of 3 judges and it's not decided on the mat or in the ring, I really can't trust it, man. So I try to stay away from, you know, fighting sports when it comes to betting. I'm just concentrating on tennis, college football, college basketball, a little NFL, a little NBA. So you guys got our plays for today. Spread said he's taking the under on Kansas State at Tulsa college basketball. He's also laying the points with Central Florida against Oakland. I'll be following him on that one as well. I'll be laying the points with Central Florida. I also said I'm going to lay the huge 36.5 for Gonzaga tonight against Southern Utah. Also taking the Bucks as long as Giannis plays tonight. We'll take the Bucks plus 7.5 at Cleveland. And lastly, we're going to roll with college football tomorrow. Northern Illinois plus 6.5. God bless you all. I appreciate you all. man, let's keep going. Let's stay positive. This is the Wagering World.